Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Happy New Year, everybody. It's your boy, 2015, my seventh straight year on the show. Or my eighth. One or two. Still made it anything at all.
Yes, sir. It's been a while.
Is this my seventh or eighth year?
I'm not exactly sure.
Well, I'm going to count it out. 08, 09, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, so I completed this. Oh, my eighth year. I am awesome.
Well, let's just put it this way, you know. You put it in perspective by saying MySpace was popular when you started.
Yeah, you know, because I actually, the first year I was on the show, I didn't get any Facebook until December of 08.
Right. Yeah.
So for the whole first year, I actually had two MySpace pages, my personal idiotic MySpace, and then I had one strictly related to boxing. With MySpace, you didn't have friend limits. So if I just saw a person in the boxing community, I friended them. And then I shared, you know, articles, and then whenever we had guests, you know, you could always do bulletins on that. So it would always be like 10 bulletins a day. Hey, we got so-and-so on tonight, you know. But hey, 7 years, I haven't missed a show yet.
Awesome. Yeah, and we got a pretty good show coming up tonight. We're just going to basically chit-chat about the year in review. We got a lot to talk about. There's a lot going on over the last year. Plus, we got a couple things to look forward to early this year. Number one is the big event this weekend, UFC 182. We're going to have a couple guys on to talk about that. Tom Padgett, of course, Psychic Tom will probably be with us any second. And then we're going to hook up with a guy that does a few columns on the UFC for us every now and then. Just did one preview on UFC 182. Guy from kind of near you, Maryland, close enough. Chris Hunterman is his name, and so we'll have him on a little bit later. Once we get all these technical difficulties ironed out, we'll get Tom on, of course. But lots to talk about, like I said. Might as well jump right into it. As far as boxing, easy to talk about what the big story of the new year is, whether this Pacquiao versus Mayweather fight's going to happen, but, you know, looking back on the year, a lot happened for both of those guys, a lot happened for boxing in general. Your boy Bernard Hopkins didn't have a good last fight of the year, but you know, before that, he was doing pretty good. And,
losing is, you know, there's no shame in that. And the fact that he went to 12 rounds and nobody else could, that says something. You know, he lost a round, but he still went to 12. Still got up when he got knocked down, you know. And he put it in.
And Sergey Kovalev's actually being thrown around as the fighter of the year in many circles. You know, he's pretty much in the top three for most people. Guy that beat 50 Cent's boy there, Terrence Crawford's up there too. People been talking about him for fighter of the year.
Terrence Crawford, another good young prospect. You know, really had to come in that year. I think he actually made fighter of the year. I didn't get to hear the Odyssey since the year just ended yesterday. The one publication I saw was, you know, picking him as fighter of the year. And you had some really breakout stars this year. You know, you had Genevieve Gawaski with a great year, Kovalev with a fantastic year, culminated with the win over Hopkins, future Hall of Famer. Crawford had a good year. You know, Manny Pacquiao had two wins. Obviously, the Bradley win was more impressive than the Chris Algieri win just because of the level of competition. Floyd Mayweather had a rough year. You know, he had two really tough fights with Marcus Maidana, and is it him, you know, slipping a little bit, or just Maidana, you know, putting on, especially in the first fight, a good rough performance?
And I'd have to say, hands down, I think Oscar De La Hoya would have to be the promoter of the year, especially considering the whole breakup with Richard Schaefer and his ability to kind of keep going it alone, even without some of his major investors. Doesn't look like he's going to get in any big legal trouble over that either. I know they're still kind of battling over the split and all that, but he just trucked on forward and he ended up going into the Hall of Fame this year as well, so unbelievable effort on his part to keep that going. And we'll see what happens in the new year here. But, you know, the only thing he's going to lose out on maybe is when Floyd finally retires, he's probably going to go heavy into the promotion game himself, so he's not going to use Golden Boy for any of this stuff anymore. He's already kind of moving in that direction, but I don't think Oscar's worried. He seems to be pushing on with no trouble there. But I'll have to keep an eye out. Bob Arum's actually taking a lot of slack lately. Not only from Floyd, of course, but from the general public now, because apparently he's saying that he doesn't want to have any of these Mexican holidays set up for Floyd's fight with Pacquiao.
You know what? Here's what's bullshit, though. I mean, when they made, I guess it's what, I mean, 8 years now, amazing how time flies, back in 07, that big Dale Hoya Mayweather fight. They purposely did that on Cinco de Mayo weekend. Well, here's the problem. Mayweather won. And then he just kind of kept that weekend. Nobody else's fault. I mean, he set it up the weekend. He won. He took it over. He's making money.
So, I mean, basically the only argument Aram has is he wants to have his other Mexican fighters fight on those holidays. But I mean, if you're talking about the biggest fight in the world right now, you know, your other fighters can wait, or they can pick a different day. I'm sure the Mexican fans will forgive them if they don't fight on a Mexican holiday.
Right.
So it obviously feeds the fire of people thinking that Aram is the one who really doesn't want this fight. And I usually kind of dismiss that idea until now. But, you know, when something like this comes up and he's sticking to his guns over something so stupid, it's like, you know, how could these people be so out of touch that, you know, they're going to stonewall this whole thing over something so small? I guess to him it doesn't appear small, but I mean, are these Mexican fans going to spend all that much more because it's a holiday? What's the deal? Is he going to, like, really be financially hurt if he takes one of those holidays and puts the Pacquiao fight on that day instead of what he wants to do? I mean, I would think, you know, he'd be able to put more than just one fighter on Pacquiao's undercard, too. So
Yeah.
I'm waiting for Tom here, trying to connect with him, but I don't see him yet, so we will get him on as soon as we can. As far as other boxing goes, all about the fight of the year, and you know that they've been talking knockout of the year with Andy Lee. Over,
I saw that. That was the fight. He was back against the ropes, and he had a course like that.
Right.
I think I'll give him that.
Fight of the year, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of leaning towards Hopkins versus Korbalev, but it wasn't really all that exciting.
What were you leaning that towards?
Hopkins versus Korbalev, but at the same time,
for what?
Bloody or exciting. It was just kind of.
I couldn't put that in fight of the year, only because it wasn't competitive enough, and there were a lot of rampages he didn't do anything. For fight of the year, I could go more towards maybe Mayweather-Maidana won. That was a good fight. Maybe because Maidana brought so much pressure. Crawford-Gamboa, I think that's a front runner, fight of the year. And then I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that you watch. It's just that when you get a fight, maybe you're even really a good, these are guys that are like not big household names, but they throw them a good sum, and it's like, oh, damn, that was a good fight. And I'm just trying to think of some other ones that I happen to be fortunate enough to catch during the course of the year. But right now, if I had to pick today, without really going back over and looking at things, I'm going to go with Crawford-Gamboa. That was a good fight. Gamboa was doing well early, and Crawford broke through in the middle rounds and eventually knocked him out.
Right. Yeah, that was definitely a pretty decent fight. I think it was a big news story, too, because, the 50 Cent deal with whoever that other rapper was that met with him supposedly bet $1 million on Crawford, and 50 didn't pay up. So it's getting pretty heated, that little battle. This guy had a rap song out, I think I talked about this a few weeks ago, where he's like, 50, you better pay up, or else. Elaborate on what the or else is, but guy's been killed for less before in these rap beefs, so I wouldn't be surprised if something crazy happens. He doesn't get his payment schedule set up. But $1 million is a lot to bet, but usually when people bet that much, it's just a joke. Apparently, this guy thought he was serious, so he's calling him out. Another development, too, that 50 Cent's been talking a lot about is Jay-Z's getting into the boxing world. He's supposed to be putting on his first card this year. So 50 Cent's come out and said that, good luck. You know, it's not going to be as easy as you think it is. So I don't know. I know they actually had a bid. They had their first purse bid for a fight, and one of the fighters backed out, so obviously it's not starting out there. Yeah, we got Tom connected.
All right, here we go. Okay, yeah, I don't know what the problem was. I was trying to get through earlier, and nothing was coming in. Tried a couple times, just sent you an email, but disregard. I'm here.
Yeah, I guess Blog Talk Radio has a big message up that says, if you need customer support today, shit out of luck. But they like to wish everyone happy holidays anyway. That's kind of fun. But anyway, Tony and I were just going to go over the boxing subjects of fight of the year, fighter of the year, knockout of the year, all that stuff. Promoter of the year. So we're going to connect with our other columnist, Chris, and get started with a little bit of MMA talk. But while we're waiting, Tony, I'm wondering what you're thinking about the wrestling situation with Brock Lesnar. Everybody's talking about Brock Lesnar now leaving WWE, but I have not heard word one from Lesnar himself on the subject. And I'm wondering if you're any updates.
Well, I haven't heard anything official yet. Of course, you hear rumors. Yeah, you hear rumors that he wants to go back to the UFC. If that happens, of course, he's going to have to get out of his contract. And, I don't know. With that, physical issue he had a few years ago, was it like the diverticulitis or whatever it was, when he was, very, very sick, we know wrestling's physical. Wrestling is, a very physical form of entertainment, but at the same time, it is choreographed. So, say he's in there with the John Cena, or he's in there with a Big Show, or even one of the new young guys like the Roman Reigns, or the Seth Rollins, or the Daniel Bryan, and something happens where something's happened where he's getting hurt in there, or something, not going right for him. Well, you know, you can almost do like a verbal cue, and they can kind of work around that. Where it's like if you're in there and you're, you know, fighting in the UFC and you hurt something or you're not feeling well or something's bothering you, well, what's the guy going to do? He's going to take advantage of that and he's going to actually pummel the shit out of you over it.
My thought process in this whole thing is that I don't trust these reports because for so long everybody's been saying, oh, we want Brock back, you know, Brock should come back. And all these fans saying this and that about, you know, whether this guy's going to come back. And like I said, there hasn't really been much from Brock himself on the subject. I haven't seen an interview where he's talked about at all coming back. So it makes me wonder whether this is just like kind of built up on a fake premise, kind of like wrestling itself, you know. But at the same time, I think, well, if there is any truth to it, maybe it's just Brock putting the idea out there himself, or his camp putting the idea out there himself, so that WWE comes in and says, well, wait a second, we'll give you more money than what they're going to give you, so why don't you stay with us? And, of course, I think Brock is more about money than legacy as far as, you know, wanting to go to the UFC and prove something. I don't really think he has to prove anything. He already had the belt, so it was a good deal for him. And the other question is whether he can even drop heavyweights.
Hello, this is Chris.
Hey, Chris, it's Rich from Fight.
Hey, Rich, how you doing?
Good. We're on the phone here with Tony the Tornado and Psychic Tom Padgett.
How you doing, Chris?
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you? Not too bad, man. How about yourself? Good. Just want to wish
happy
New Year to all you guys.
Yeah, same to you.
And we're talking about some big stories from last year, and I just brought up the Brock Lesnar subject.
Right. I knew that you and I have kind of had an email exchange about that. And I mean, I really think he's going to come back to UFC because, like I told you, Rich, the man likes money, and UFC can get him a lot of it, and maybe Bellator too, you know? So, and I really think he has unfinished business. I think the way he left UFC left a really bad taste in his mouth, you know, getting pounded by Kane and then getting pounded by Overeem. And as much as he loves money, I think he wants to right that wrong. I think he wants to show that he really can be a great, great fighter.
Right. Well, my concerns, I know you've heard them. I just voiced a few of them. But the major thing is, you know, to me, obviously the safer sport is wrestling for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously he had that big facial cut that probably made him think twice about his fighting career.
Right.
And obviously the stomach issues, the, you know, the diverticulitis problem. Now he's healthy. Now he seems like you said, he's losing some weight.
Yeah, like I saw him on Monday Night Raw this past week. I still occasionally watch WWE, and he looked noticeably slimmer to me. I've been reading that if he is in the beginning stages of a weight cut to make his comeback to UFC, so.
I just hope he's not going to try to cut down to 205.
Well, hey, I don't know about you. I think a fight between he and John Jones would definitely sell.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a very distinct possibility.
You know, I'm trying to form a mental image of him at 205, and it's not clicking. You know, I just can't imagine.
Yeah, I mean. He'd have to lose a lot of muscle mass, that guy. I mean,
yeah,
you look at him now,
that,
I mean, he's built like a semi-truck. He struggles just to get down to 265, I think. He probably walks around probably a good 275, 280. I mean, he's a big boy.
At least.
So
I mean, and I think...
I can't fathom him filling that far down.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's part of the allure of him is he's big, he's strong, he's a big freight train, and, you know, sometimes Ron can overcome technique. So I think that's the exciting part of him. I couldn't imagine him that
light. Yeah, I mean, and you know, I've also heard that he maybe wasn't the hardest worker when he was training the first time around UFC. He just relied so much on his natural ability that maybe this time he'll take it a little bit more seriously, prepare him, you know, grind a little bit harder. So if that's true,
yeah.
if he really just wasn't applying himself the first time, that's a scary thought, a motivated Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Chris, I think that a lot of it was, you know, sometimes your training camp reflects you, and you need guys that are going to really push you and make you do stuff. And before he fought Overeem, his trainer at the time said, well, Brock's stronger than he's ever been. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, who's going to outmuscle him in the first place? I mean, I think that you need to train your weaknesses, not your strengths. And I think that he would have been well served to maybe even move around a bit, you know, go to some different teams and just work on maybe some jiu-jitsu on the ground with the gi, just and get a good boxing coach. But it just seems like he just wanted to do his own thing. Kind of hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's what all the great ones do. You know, GSP, he would travel around. I mean, he had his home base in Montreal, but, you know, he'd go out to Albuquerque and train with Greg Jackson. He trained with Olympic athletes. Like, you know, he went around and he picked up different things from different places and molded it to his style. But, again, if I remember correctly, I think watching one of those preview shows when Brock was in UFC, he had his own gym in the middle of nowhere in Minnesota that only he had access to and maybe a few other guys. So he really, you know, isolated himself kind of with his training. And, you know, he had training partners, but again, like we just said, you know, the great ones seem to kind of move around, go to different camps, you know, work with different people and just try to soak up as much knowledge as you can. So I think, you know, that's a very good point. I think, you know, Brock decided to do that too. You know, I think that would really be a benefit to him.
Getting back to Brock, I'd love to see him back. I'd love to see what he could do. But like I said, the big question in my mind is why haven't we heard directly from him on the subject? He really wants to come back. And why hasn't he talked to Dana White? Dana said he hasn't even got a phone call from him.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at it this way. Nobody knew that CM Punk was coming to UFC, and then lo and behold, he shows up on the last pay-per-view and says, hey, I'm going to be fighting in UFC. So, you know, we don't know that things happen. We don't know that nothing has. But, you know, UFC seems to be pretty good at, you know, keeping secrets because, like I said, they were able to, you know, spring CM Punk on us out of nowhere. So, you know, anything's possible. You may be talking to Dana on the down low, or maybe they haven't really touched base yet, but maybe they will.
All right. Well, I'll believe it when I see it. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I agree, but I'm not ready to dismiss it. You know, like I said, I grew up a wrestling fan. You know, you never know what's going to happen. So, like I said, I'll believe it when I see it, just like you said, but, you know, I never say never is a motto of mine. So.
Right. Well, I do say never when it comes to Bellator getting them. Scott Coker's out there saying he's going to bring in Fedor, Brock, I don't know, I think he's going to try to bring Bruce Lee back from the dead, too, while he's at it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the picture on Twitter. I guess Coker spent New Year's with Fedor, and I also, I guess, I read another interview where Fedor said, you know, no, I'm done fighting. The only way I would come back is if God, you know, gave me a sign that I should or something like that. I mean, we know he's a very, very religious person, so sounds to me like maybe sounds like he really is done. So maybe Scott is wasting his time, or maybe he's just hanging out with an old buddy.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see Fedor come back maybe as like an ambassador to one of these big promotions. But you know, as far as
he definitely had appeal. You know, we saw him on CBS. I'm sure a lot of fans still remember that. You know, they really, when Strikeforce had those couple of cards on CBS, they really built it around him. So, you know, the name Fedor still, you know, still carries some weight right now.
Right. And, you know, I like the idea that, you know, Scott wants to bring some big names in, but I'd just like to see him focus on possible goals rather than stuff that just seems like it's never going to happen. I mean, if they're going to bring in a guy like Brock Lesnar, they're going to have these deals that they're trying to sell to Rampage actually work. You know, they'd have to have a big wrestling outlet that he could still do that. They couldn't even
do that with him. Rampage just never seemed like he really just fit into Bellator. I mean, Rampage is a very interesting guy, as we all know. And, you know, it was just kind of like a square peg in a round hole. Like, he came in there and he was on this, you know, big hype train because he had just left very acrimoniously from UFC. But it just seemed like he never really got comfortable there. I mean, he had that kind of little feud with King Mo, and, you know, he beat King Mo in a very controversial fight that some people thought that King Mo won and they were going to do a rematch, but then they didn't, and now Rampage is back in UFC. So, I don't know. That whole Rampage thing in Bellator was just seemed like a really just strange situation all around.
Yeah, and it's even stranger that now, you know, I've recently heard that Tito Ortiz rejected the idea of joining this class action lawsuit. There's three of them now, but they're all probably going to be joined at some point. And we approached Tito about it, and Tito's saying that basically, well, I don't want to burn my new bridges that I built here with the UFC because I'm a manager and I've got some fighters that I want to get in there. Kind of opens the door to even him coming back.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I saw that too, that Tito declined to join the lawsuit. Like I said, he made his money in UFC. I mean, UFC in the early days, they built around him. He was the guy. His feud with, you know, Ken Shamrock was like the first real MMA feud of its kind. And it just seems like Tito's really kind of close. I mean, like you said, he still has those fighters that he manages and he helps out who are fighting for UFC. But I really think he's closed the door on that chapter of his career. I mean, he really seems entrenched in Bellator. He looks good to me. You know, I was skeptical when he came back because I thought his neck was just being held together by chewing gum and scotch tape. But he's looked pretty good since he came back. You know, he took out Somenko. He picked apart Bonner, even if Bonner's not remotely what he was. So he looks like he's kind of revitalized a little bit. So I think he's just really kind of focusing on his thing in Bellator, and he's just not really worrying about UFC right now.
Yeah, he might be the one guy the UFC would take back either. Probably be like, no, we'll pass. You'd stay over there. Even if it would look good for us to get you back, but we don't need you. So, I wouldn't be surprised if you're right about that one. But looking at the whole year as you know, one unit. We're watching over all the stuff for boxing. What would you say is the you and Tom both fight of the year and fighter of the year?
Are we talking about boxing or MMA?
Mixed martial arts.
Oh, mixed martial arts. Okay. Well, for me, my fighter of the year, I'd probably have to say TJ Dillashaw, just because you know he pulled off one of the biggest upsets against Barao. I was one of the many who thought he didn't stand a chance. I thought Barao would handle him, you know, in two rounds, maybe less, but he really just shocked me. Like, he had just a perfect game plan for Barao. He picked him apart. He kept moving around. He was confusing Barao. It was just such an amazing performance. And then they were supposed to have the rematch a couple months ago, and unfortunately Barao had his weight issues or what have you, and you know, would have been easy for Dillashaw to be like, no, I'm not doing a fight, but he took on this new guy, Soto, who he didn't know, wasn't prepared for, and he put on another great performance, and Soto was game too, so and I'm really disappointed that Dominic Cruz tore his ACL, because I was really looking forward to that fight in the new year. But so for me, you know, my fighter of the year would be Dillashaw, definitely.
I would have to say great minds think alike, because I was kicking this around, and he just, as I said, he shocked the world. I mean, I never would have thought that would happen that way. And it was the total dominance total domination for the whole fight. That's what was so amazing about it to me. There was no back and forth. It may not have been the most exciting fight, because I define excitement as kind of like a back-and-forth thing. But then DJ was just on, and he was not one and done. So I'd have to go with him also.
Well, I'd have to sort of disagree. I mean, I would have picked Mark Hunt if it wasn't for his last loss. But I'm kind of leaning more towards Carla Esparza, the kid on the block coming in from the Ultimate Fighter, and going up against a girl with a 3-1 record as the underdog somehow, and then getting the drop done, getting the new championship belt. I think I'm really excited about, you know, the opportunity she's going to have, the fight that they had between Gadoa and the girl from Poland there, to determine who's going to fight her next, was a hell of a fight, too. So I'm really looking forward to the little fighters, for one, see what they're going to do in the new women's division. Also looking forward to Holly Holm, but she didn't get a chance to have her first UFC fight yet, so can't really be fighter of the year when you don't fight. But I'd pick her as fighter of the year just for that monumental first season with the belt being on the line at the end of it, and looking forward to what she does.
That's a great choice. Carla looked completely dominant in that fight. I mean, she came into that season as the, defending Invicta strawweight championship to vacate her title. But yeah, she was dominant from start to finish. I know a lot of people were on the Rose Namajunas bandwagon. I was one of them. I thought she would pull the upset against Carla, and I wear the egg on my face. I really didn't appreciate just how good Carla was. And Rose would be great someday. She definitely has the talent, but Carla's experience and skill really shone through in that fight. So that was a good choice.
She was married to Pat Barry because she kind of did the same thing that Pat did against was it Brock Lesnar that he ended up getting the first round, just beat the shit out of him, and then just got choked out in the second round. Yeah, I think it was Brock Lesnar.
I don't know if it was Brock. I think they trained together for a time. He fought Chet Congo. They had that wild fight that they just went at it at the end and looked like Congo was going to get knocked out, but then Barry ended up being the one knocked out.
It was like an arm choke or something.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm struggling to think of which fight that was. But
anyway, yeah, she just basically, it wasn't the muscle factor for her, using too much muscles. It was just cardio. She didn't seem to have enough cardio to hang with Carla to the deep part of the
fight. Yeah, I think Carla was just really head and shoulders above the other girls in that house. I mean, she was the number one seed for a reason. She had the experience, she had the pedigree, she had the skill, and, she really just showed that during that season.
But as far as fight of the year, I would definitely give it to Barao and Dillashaw. That was definitely my top fight of the year. I recognized it in that whole article about Dave. Just basically putting Dillashaw on the top of the list as far as great MMA defense. And I actually call him the Irish step dancing Mexican bullfighter.
Yeah, that's, like I said, I picked Dillashaw as my fighter of the year because of that huge upset he had over Barao. But I think for me, my fight of the year, I really have to go with Chris Weidman and Lyoto Machida from over the summer. A lot of people were still doubting Weidman, even though he defeated Silva twice. But a lot of people are saying, those two times were just flukes. The first time Silva was just clowning around and didn't take Weidman seriously. Weidman got lucky. And then when they had the rematch, everybody was saying, Silva broke his leg. Weidman didn't really beat him. So I think that fight with Machida really, opened up people's eyes to just how good Weidman really is. I mean, Machida really took him into deep waters, and we all know Machida's style is very hard to prepare for. But, Weidman stood in there, and they went at it tooth and nail for five rounds. Machida showed why he's dangerous, but Weidman showed why he's a champ. And I really think he went over a lot of doubters that night. And I just remember watching that fight and really enjoying it. So for me, Weidman and Machida is my pick for fight of the year.
And there was a lot of ebb and flow in that fight. I mean, it wasn't over till it was over. I hate that cliche, but I use it all the time. But Machida hung on till the end, and he could have easily pulled it out. Now, as far as excitement, we can go back to Matt Brown and Eric Silva, which I thought
was
exciting, even though it was a bit one-sided. Well, I won't say a bit one-sided. It was very one-sided, but I kept thinking that Silva was going to turn it around and at least get back into it because I knew he had that ability, but Brown was just a machine that night. And then one that we just had recently was with Junior Dos Santos and Stipe Miocic. I thought that was just, again, for the ebb and flow of the fight, the competitiveness of it.
Oh, man, that was a war. those two guys,
yeah.
Man. I really thought JDS was going to make short work of him just because I know how good JDS is, and I knew Stipe had won some fights, but I didn't really think he was ready for that kind of level of competition. But, man, he showed that he is just one tough hombre. I mean, those guys slugged it out, went at it like crazy. So, yeah, that was a great fight.
Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah. And fans like that a little bit more than they should, I think. You know, if they're really pure fans of the sport, you might appreciate a technical fight more, but I guess, you know, the blood and guts factor turns most people on.
And, you know, we're forgetting the two fights that Robbie Lawler and Johnny Hendricks had. I mean, those guys, you know, they're doing a trilogy, and I'm willing to bet that's going to do a good number because those guys, man, they laid it all out on the line in their two fights. I watched the last one in person or on television, and I was actually a little surprised at the result. I scored it for Hendricks, but I could see a little bit how you give the fight to Lawler. But, man, those guys, they just stood there and banged, man. They took each other's best shot over and over again. So a lot of good choices this year. I don't think we can go wrong with any of our choices for Fight of the Year.
Yeah, it was definitely a good one.
Where's that number plate bracket for my truck? Shelf over there. Bookshelf.
So, yeah, we went over Fight of the Year now. Fighter of the Year. How about Knockout of the Year? That's USC Knockout right now, actually.
Man, Knockout of the Year. Wow, that's a good question. Again, just so many choices. I think that Josh Salmon, the head kick that he had KO in his last fight, that was nasty. I mean, anytime you nail a guy right on the chops with a kick, you know, that'll definitely put you in the running. You know, Matt Brown, his knockout of Silva was pretty good. You know, God, so many choices. Can't go wrong with any of them. I think for me, I think Dan Henderson's knockout of Shogun earlier this year because, you know, Henderson was getting rocked and then all of a sudden he just unleashed that right hand out of nowhere, caught Shogun like square on the nose. Like you never really see anybody get like shot purely on the nose and nowhere else, man. Just completely shattered it and Shogun was out. So, you know, I think for me, just, you know, the old H-bomb does it for me.
I think Stefan Struve getting knocked out by Mark Hunt is my favorite of all time. I think that was the year before last, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, king of the walk-off, man. King of the walk-off. He just unloaded and he just walked away like, yeah, I got this.
And it wasn't too bad. The one we knocked out Roy Nelson either, but this is kind of a flash punch. He wasn't really out cold knockout. I guess that one doesn't qualify for me, but I like your choice. For the big event this weekend, UFC 182 preview there on Fightings Unlimited, Chris. Obviously, you like Jones. I like Jones. Not everybody in the world likes Jones, though. He gets a lot of flack for being so-called fake, but for a guy that actually saw him in a fight on a small circuit in Massachusetts, actually it was in Connecticut, for a company that doesn't even exist anymore, and it was in a ring. He knocked a guy out in the first round. You know, I kind of have a little bit of a bias towards him. So, you know, on top of that, just watching what he's done in the UFC and seeing how he's adapted from fight to fight, like, just little things, like the way he uses oblique kicks that nobody uses. You know, stuff like that makes all the difference in the world because so many people are just doing the same old basic stuff and nobody's trying to do anything different. And the guys who do stuff different, guys like TJ Dillashaw, got a whole different style, they do better. And, you know, I don't understand how not enough people in the sport get that concept and they just keep doing the same old stuff. Yeah, you got to know that same old stuff, but it's not going to win you fights if that's all you do. John Jones and Daniel Cormier are probably better matched than anybody else on the planet right now. Jones is so much more dynamic. He has so much deeper experience. And the one claim to fame that Cormier has wrestling, Ron Jones is pretty good at that too.
Yeah, I mean, I have Jones winning actually by a submission probably in the third round. I mean, I think Cormier is going to be a gamer. He's definitely going to try to, you know, dictate his style to Jones. But like you were just saying, Rich, I mean, Jones is just on another level from everybody else right now. He's younger than Cormier. He's faster than Cormier. He's more dynamic. Like you said, he does all these things. He does these moves that nobody else does. I mean, look at his resume. Look at the guys he's finished. He made Shogun look foolish. He choked out Rampage. He dominated Rashad. He choked Machida unconscious. You know, the only guy that's ever given him a real test was Gustafson, and I watched that fight. That was a terrific fight. But Jones is just head and shoulders above everybody else right now, and I really think that whenever he chooses to retire, I think, you know, I was reading an article about him the other day, and his plan is he wants to get out of the fight game by 35. I really think he'll retire as the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. That's how good this guy is. And, you know, a lot of people get, you know, he gets flack from people saying, oh, you're fake, oh, you're this, oh, you're that. I mean, winning's going to do that. Nobody likes people who win all the time. There's a reason why the Yankees are always hated. There's a reason why people don't like the Lakers or even my team, the Patriots. People don't like people who win all the time. They want to see, you know, they always want to see something new come down the pike. And, you know, yes, does Jones act different than he did when he first started? Yes, he has. When he first came into UFC, he was this humble kid, you know, just being really polite and everything. And then, you know, when he won the title from Shogun, he started to change a little bit. But you know what? That's what happens when you win. That ego gets a little bit bigger. You're very confident. You're carrying yourself well. It's going to come out. You know, it's not a unique thing to John Jones. And, you know, that's why I don't really just pay too much attention to people who are, you know, criticizing him for being, you know, fake or what have you. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't, like you said, who cares if I'm fake? I win fights.
Yeah, and the other thing about Cormier that not a lot of people are talking about is he is 35. You know, he's the age that Jones wants to be when he gets out. So he's got a late start to fighting. And, you know, getting to this stage, obviously, he had to go through a lot of heavyweights first. So I give him the advantage there because, you know, when you're cut down from heavyweight, you're going to have a lot of that power still. And he can strike. Yeah, I'll definitely give him that. It's just, doesn't have the reach and the dynamic style to penetrate Jones' defense, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that Cormier has talent. You know, I watched him in the Strikeforce Grand Prix, and he pretty much dominated that competition. He was still fairly new to MMA at that time. You know, he knocked out Bigfoot. You know, he dominated Barnett. You know, but like you said, he's 35. He's older, and I really think his knee is still an issue. Like, he, you know, he said that, you know, this fight being rescheduled from September when it was supposed to happen to now would help him out because it would give his knee more time to heal. But it sounded like he was getting ready to have surgery before he was given this opportunity. So I really think, you know, that knee may come into play. That's why I think, you know, Jones might go for a submission, you know, just try to get him down and lock in some kind of a maneuver. But ultimately it just comes down to the fact that Jones is just on another level from everybody else.
Yeah, I think the only way Cormier wins this is if John Jones throws one of them rubber chicken leg kicks that Anderson Silva landed on Chris Weidman.
Yeah, or maybe one of those front kicks that, you know, Silva unleashed on Vitor or Machida unleashed on Couture or something like that.
I mean, the leg break, you know. John Jones kicks him and breaks his leg. That's the only way Cormier wins.
Yeah, I just don't see the way that Cormier wins this fight. I mean, like I said, he's been training his butt off, apparently. He has this drive to win, but I just don't see it. I would be genuinely shocked and surprised if Cormier won this fight.
Right. And then the big one, actually a guy could have been considered for Fighter of the Year if he had a little bit more action this year. Cowboy Cerrone, taking the best Bellator had to offer and wiping the mat with him in his last fight, and he's just jumping right back into it here against a guy who's undefeated and with nothing but promising, Miles Jury.
Yeah, I still think Cerrone's going to take this. Like, I know that, you know, Jury's undefeated and he's, rising up the ranks, and, you know, he's beaten his last two victories have come against, you know, Diego Sanchez and Takanori Gomi, but I think it's pretty clear that those guys are not what they used to be. And frankly, I think Diego Sanchez is one of the more overrated fighters in the UFC. I think he's been living off his fight against Clay Guida for a while now. I just don't really see much talent with him. I think he's just a brawler, which isn't bad, but, you know, for him to be held up as one of the, you know, best fighters of the last few years, I think it's kind of misguided. But, you know, so, and Cerrone, I mean, the guy just comes to bang all the time. And he's, you know, he's a gun. He fights anybody, anywhere, anytime. He's just, and, you know, I think Jury will do great things in the UFC. I just don't think it'll be tomorrow night, or Saturday night.
Well, what do you think about those two, Tom? We didn't really get your opinion on the Jones versus Cormier.
Well, the thing that I see with that, I want to see the clinch. Because when you think about it, the guys that are really good strikers have had so much trouble getting inside on Jones because of his reach. And then when they do, they just get maimed in the clinch. And then when you look at the grapplers that have fought him, they can get inside, but they don't seem to have the firepower to set up a takedown. I mean, it takes more than just shooting in on Jones with a double leg to get a takedown. Now, where I see Cormier having his best chance is in the clinch. I think he's got those kind of skills because he does combine the both. And I still look at not only where he trains, you know, when he trains with Cain Velasquez every day, but I look at what he did in the heavyweight division. I mean, he took on some pretty bad dudes. I mean, a lot of people say Mir's past his prime, but, hey, Frank Mir in his prime was, well, as good as he gets. So, I don't know. I mean, this one's very close. I would not be surprised to see Cormier pull it off. But, hey, you know the old cliche, that's why we fight. So, but I agree with everything you guys said about Jones. So far, he's been on another level. He's done things that no one else has done. And as far as I'm concerned about a champ, he has to be the favorite until he's beat. It's that simple. But I think that this is going to be his sternest test. So we'll see what happens.
How about Cerrone and Jury?
You know, there's a part of me that is screaming Jury, but I don't know. Cowboy's just on such a roll that, I mean, these last couple fights, he's just looked unbeatable almost. I mean, and I hate to use that phrase, too. No such thing as that. But I think I got to go with Cowboy on that one. I don't know if he'll stop him, but because I think I like Jury's mindset. I like his confidence. He doesn't seem like he's cocky. He's so well-rounded. He just does everything right on the money. But I would agree that his level of competition just hasn't quite been there. So Cerrone, I've got to go with Cowboy.
All right. Yeah, I think the same thing. I mean, Jerry's obviously very talented. Undefeated record says a lot. But Cerrone just has that toughness about him. And, you know, he's worked with so many different people. That's the other factor people don't sort of get. He just works with so many people that he's probably the most calm person once he gets in the octagon that I've ever seen. And he just looks so confident when he gets in there. I even said that sometimes it takes getting hit a bunch of times to make him realize he's actually in a fight. So he goes out there, and sometimes he doesn't do that great in the first round, but he always makes the right adjustments to win the fight. So I think that's what he's going to do here. He might have a tough round against Jury in the first round, but second round he's going to take care of business. And then we've got Nate Marquardt versus Brad Tavares. Marquardt's had a little bit of a rough history with the UFC, so I'm sure he'd be looking to get back in the good graces with another win here. And Brad Tavares is 12-3. He's got a pretty decent record. But I don't know if he has the experience level that Marquardt has. But, you know, sometimes that doesn't matter. Sometimes it's all about skill. It just depends on where this fight goes and what happens. But I like experience myself in this one. I definitely think Marquardt has what it takes to you know, build another big run of wins here. So, that.
Yeah, I really got to go with the veteran here, Mark Hart. I mean, you know, I was looking at their records, and Tavares seems to be kind of hitting the skid a little bit, and, you know, Mark Hart's trying to give it another go at middleweight after he dropped down to welterweight for a few fights, and I just really think that veteran savviness is just going to come through. I mean, like you said, you know, Nate's had his issues as of late, but the guy is still a good fighter. You know, he's really good in Strikeforce. He won that title, and I just really think that, you know, it's just one of those things, like, it's just not your night tonight, kid. You know, I think Tavares it's going to be a good fighter, but I just think it's kind of the wrong opponent at the wrong time for him.
Yeah, and I don't think Nate is too shop-worn either, as you know, from a physical standpoint. I don't think he's taken too many beats. I mean, he's come up short a few times, like everyone. But I mean, I can't picture in my mind sometimes when, you know, sometimes you see someone get beat so bad, it's like, wow, are they ever going to be the same? But I can't recall that with Nate. I mean, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I think physically he's still good to go.
Well, you know, the other thing too is, you know, the testosterone therapy that he was doing. Some people don't do all that well when they're not doing that stuff. So you've got to take a close look at how he performs to see if he's one of those people that can adapt without it. So.
Yeah, I think he will. Like, I know he was taking the therapy like other guys, like Henderson, like Vitor, but obviously we saw what Vitor looked like when he was on the juice, and even though Marquardt was using it, he didn't really look like he was fresh out of Muscle and Fitness or some other, you know, bodybuilding publication. But I don't know if it's going to have that much of an effect on him as it might with someone like Vitor. Like, I'm really interested to see how Vitor looks and performs next month against Weidman, but getting back to this fight, I just don't think that's going to be too much of an issue for him.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I definitely agree. Chris, how far back do you go with the sport? Were you following it back in the early 90s, mid-90s?
No, actually, like a lot of MMA fans, I started out as a professional wrestling fan. I grew up watching that. I've been a fan of MMA and UFC since about 2009. First pay-per-view I remember watching was, I forget which number it was, but the main event was Anderson Silva against Thales Lytus, which I know wasn't the greatest intro into MMA because that fight was a stinker. just about 5-6 years.
Well, the reason I'm asking is back at UFC 13, way back, 1997, Vitor was like 240 pounds. And, I mean, it looked like he'd been doing a lot of powerlifting. And I'm thinking that seemed to come on awful quick from his debut. Because I think he started back at UFC. It was UFC 13 where he started. I'm sorry. And then I think it was UFC 14 or 15. It was a couple. It was October 97. I think he came along early in 97. And he was nowhere near that big. And he had to be about 240 pounds. And it didn't do him any good when he fought Randy Couture. So, this ought to be fun to see how he's going to do.
We got this guy from Japan. I don't know a whole lot about, but Chris says he's pretty good. Kyoji Horiguchi, 14-1. And it sounds like a mismatch when you look at his opponent, 6-3, Luis Godinho. Not only that, it almost looks like this should be on the undercard, like way under preliminaries. You got another fight on the undercard. It looked like it could be on the main event. Should be a little switcheroo here. Evan Dunham versus Rodrigo Dam should be on the undercard, I think. But maybe they're just really trying to highlight this guy from Japan. Kyoji Horiguchi. God, no, I really don't like his style anyway. I don't even think he's that great. So, kind of a no-brainer on this one. And then we got one of the more intriguing fights, I think, on this card. Hector Lombard versus Josh Barkman. Barkman from World Series of Fighting. Hector. Is he in Bellator or Strikeforce?
He came over from Bellator. I remember Dana made a huge deal about signing him, and he thought that he was going to be just this huge wrecking machine, and then he comes into UFC, and his first fight is a very underwhelming split decision loss to Tim Boach.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very disappointing for a lot of people. I mean, he kind of the standard bearer for guys like him. I point always to Chuck Congo because, you know, he's like such a muscular guy, but he has just such bafflingly low skill. You know, it's like sometimes he pulls out great wins, sometimes he looks great, but more often than not, you look at the guy, you're like, oh, he's going to kick this guy's ass. And he just goes out there and does stuff that you wouldn't expect him to do. He doesn't look that great. He doesn't look like he's a great fighter at all. You know, it just shows you that physicality is just one part of it. And sometimes it's not a very big part of it. Hector's one of those guys. He's got the muscles. He's got the physique. He's got the giant head of stone. But just can't seem to pull off a string of victories. So. He needs this one big. I don't think he's going to get thrown out if he lost this one or anything. But, you know, it's a tough competitor, Josh Berkeley. He's 27-10. Lombard is 34-4-1. And this is a very intriguing matchup.
Yeah, I fully expect both guys to just stand and bang. And I think it's going to come down to the decision. And I like Berkman to kind of outstrike Lombard because, again, looking at Berkman's history in World Series of Fighting, I mean, this guy just, he was kind of, you know, mowing his way through people. I mean, I believe he defeated John Fitch. And, you know, just seems like a guy who, you know, really just likes to get in the pocket and, you know, exchange with guys. And Lombard seems to be kind of that guy, too. So if this fight goes to the ground at all, I'd be shocked. But I just, again, I really just haven't been impressed with Lombard, either at middleweight or welterweight since he came to UFC. So I know a lot of people probably would consider this an upset, but I think Berkman takes it.
Yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility at all. I think Berkman's a very scrappy guy. He's definitely probably got a reach advantage over Lombard, so that's going to help. He's a tall guy. Lombard's kind of short and stocky, so it could be go his way very easily. I think Lombard might have a little bit more to fight for because he really wants to, you know, get back in the mix and start getting talked about as a real force. So I think he's really got a lot to fight for here. Berkman is kind of, you know, going through the motions. Not to say that he's not wanting to win as much as Lombard, but I just think he's kind of in paycheck mode at this stage of his career. And if anything, he's going to be fighting for a bonus rather than, you know, what this win will do for his career. But who knows? Anything can happen. It's MMA. I definitely agree with you that Berkman's got a better shot at winning. Lombard might just be a little bit more motivated. So we'll just have to see how that pans out. Anyway, there's another fight, Danny Castillo versus Paul Felder. It's kind of interesting. Castillo is 17-7. Felder's undefeated at 9-0. Haven't really seen anything of his. Felder, heard of him until now, so don't know how that one's going to go. Let's go through the rest of them quick. Marcus Brimage, 7-3 versus Cody Garbrandt. Sean Jordan, 16-6 versus Jared Cannonier. Evan Dunham, 14-6 versus Rodrigo Dam, 12-8. Omari Akhmedov, 13-2 versus Matt Nelson, 11-3-1. And the first fight of the night, Alexis Dufresne, 5-1 versus Marion Renaud, who was 4-1. So there you have it. That's the UFC 182 Saturday night on the MGM Grand. Of course, this is our New Year show, so we want to look forward to the New Year, too, in addition to looking back at all this stuff that's happened in 2014. 2015 now is here, and we've got a lot that could happen in boxing and mixed martial arts. I think the biggest story kind of sneaked in at the end of the year here in mixed martial arts as far as, you know, what could develop this year is these lawsuits. You know, I talked a little bit about it on our last show when they first came out, but that was before the third one came out and before the UFC picked up the big defense firm there from New York to handle their cases. So, really looking forward to, you know, whether that develops into something big or just kind of fizzles away and the fighters get paid some kind of a settlement, just going to let it go. I know the guy that's behind this reached out to me a few times, Rob Mazey, and I actually was not aware how hard he worked on this until I started reading around about it, but apparently he's been spending like a year and a half or so going around to all these different firms. He's got all these notes, memorandums and stuff. He's been to law school himself. He has his own, not his own firm, but he works at a pretty big firm. And he recruited these two other firms to work with him on this case, and they're serious people. They've got some big verdicts out of some other cases, major companies. So I definitely think it has a lot of potential. But I also know the UFC have a lot of power, political and otherwise. The Fertittas themselves, they own majority owners. They own a lot of casinos. They pay a lot of taxes. They give a lot of donations to big politicians and political interests all over California, in addition to Nevada. They've got Indian casinos that they manage in California that make money for the state. And actually, a big scandal with one guy in California that they were trying to influence, and they ended up having to have the guy give the money back that they gave him, because it was obvious that they were trying to influence him with gifts. So it was kind of an interesting part of that whole thing. It's definitely better than having the case go on in Las Vegas to have it in California, but doesn't mean that the UFC can't reach out there and maybe not bribe a judge or anything, but maybe the judge, because whatever situation or whatever politician might put some heat on. You never know what happens behind the scenes when money is involved like that, at that level. And the other thing is, these cases take so much time. I've seen a lot of these reports on all these cases, and as much as they have merits, the number one thing I keep hearing people say and reading people report on is the lawyers are probably going to be the ones that make out here. They're going to make all the money. Fighters, they might make a million or two each. But I think it's really going to have to take off. It's going to have to be like 20 or 30 fighters involved before this number really gets easier.
Yeah, I see this kind of drawing out for at least a couple of years. Like, I haven't read the documents too closely. I've really just kind of relied on reports and articles from other outlets. But to me, I really just think it's going to go probably a lot like the NFL concussion lawsuit. They're going to settle for some undisclosed amount, and both parties aren't really going to say much about it. And then, fighters might get a little extra boost in their pay, but that's probably just my cynical side talking. As much as it'd probably be nice to kind of see this case lead to some real reforms, a la the Ed O'Bannon case against NCAA, just for some reason, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, it doesn't seem very likely. But at the same time, if you're going to go after him, this is the way you go after him. I really like the fact that they've got multiple proceedings. They got like three different firms, probably like 9 or 10 different lawyers working on this thing. So if you're going to come at them, that's the way you come at them. Having some legal experience myself, I know that's how the best lawyers do it. They want to overwhelm you with the paperwork, and they just basically, they want you on the defensive right away. So you're basically in the hole before you even start trying to catch up. And they did that well, especially doing it at the end of the year. Like they did, that was pretty crafty. Also, the way they publicized it right away. Usually, law firms don't go out there and brag about a big case before it actually really gets underway. But they were putting the feelers out to these different outlets to get the story out before the first case even drops. So I think that was good on their part. But I'm very skeptical, like you. I just don't think going to really make a whole hell of a lot of impact, because I think the goal of most attorneys and firms is to settle, especially if they can get the UFC to the point where settling looks a whole lot better than exposing all your secrets through discovery and the whole
court process, going to trial and having people go up on the stand and swear to this stuff that they're accusing the UFC of.
I think if anybody's waiting to hear to see Dana White on the witness stand being grilled about the inner workings of UFC, I really think they're going to be waiting a long time. I don't see that happening myself.
Yeah, it'll be tough. But, who knows? I think it might actually force the UFC, before it even has any success, to maybe just say, wait a second, maybe we shouldn't open ourselves up to these kind of claims and do things a little bit differently, like maybe with their deal that they're supposedly working on with Monster. Maybe this time around they'll say, well, we don't have to be your exclusive sponsor anymore because we don't want to get any monopoly trouble, so you can still sponsor Bellator, but we're going to have you as a sponsor as well. So maybe something like that will have a subtle effect, but I think that's the only thing you see right away. And as far as boxing goes, obviously the big story everybody's been talking about is Pacquiao versus Mayweather, and will it happen? My theory has always been yes. It will happen, but...
My theory has always been no. So far, I've been right.
Yes. Yes, you have been. But it's closer than ever, I think, right now. And my theory for being yes is basically the only reason it hasn't happened is because Floyd wants to purposely delay it to his last or second to last fight, like it's appearing to be the situation now. So number one, he wants to wait for Manny to get older, and number two, he wants to wait for the best fight opportunity to present itself. So I think that's what's going on behind the scenes. Unfortunately, we talked about this a little bit earlier, Tony and I, before Chris and Tom got on. But I think Bob Arum is kind of really screwing things up. He's being a little bit stubborn about the whole thing, and everybody thought Floyd was being ridiculous when he said that, well, the only way I'm going to fight Manny is if he signs on with me and dumps Bob. But now obviously Floyd's not saying that anymore. He's willing to work on something, and then it comes out that Bob Arum doesn't want to do the Mexican holidays, which Floyd always fights on the Mexican holidays for whatever reason. That's the thing. So for Bob Arum to say, no, that's not on the table, it seems pretty petty on his part. It seems like he's really trying to dodge this fight. Try to set Manny up with one of his own fighters. So he's got to deal with this cross-promotion, co-promotion with HBO and Showtime that they're trying to work out. So, I hate to say it, but I guess Floyd's been right about some of the stuff he said about Bob. never want to admit Floyd being right. But some other fighters are worth mentioning, worth looking at. What's going to happen with Kennedy Golovkin? Kind of intriguing. We talked about Sergey Kovalev earlier, being the consensus fighter of the year for a lot of boxing outlets. Max Boxing is named their fighter of the year. He's going to be taking on Adonis Stevenson, trying to unify the titles there. So it's looking like a pretty decent fight coming up. Of course, Deontay Wilder coming up on a big fight there with who's he fighting there? Drawing a blank.
Fighting Biran Severn.
The last of the Mohicans, I guess you could call him. He's the last guy from Don King's stable for the belt. I don't even think Don King has any big fighters other than him. That's his last guy.
If you want to read a really good feature about Don King, it was one I read a few months ago. If you go to the Grantland website, the one that's operated by Bill Simmons at ESPN, one of his writers put together a feature about King that was really excellent and really just kind of showed how far his star has kind of fallen since the days he was, kind of managing Mike Tyson and those guys. I think he's maybe only managing like one fighter right now, and he's really just kind of still living in the past. But it was a great read, very well written.
Yeah, we didn't actually get to talk to him in person, but Tony and I saw him in Brockton, Massachusetts, when Rock Marciano statue went up. We both went to go see it, and he gave a pretty interesting speech. It was a big hit with the crowd, but I always thought he was a scumbag myself. And, you know, some of the things.
Well, you could apply that statement to a lot of people in boxing. I mean, that's kind of one of the grievances I have with the sport. I mean, I'm going to just admit up front, I don't know a lot about boxing, but I think one of the biggest problems it's faced just in recent memory, or even just the last couple of decades, is rampant corruption for everybody. You know, promoters, fighters, managers, just corruption, corruption, corruption. I think that's really been the main reason why it's kind of, you know, fallen in terms of notoriety. You know, boxing was once known as the sport of kings, but I really don't think a lot of people consider that to be the case nowadays.
Right. And it's important that you bring that up, because I was talking about this a couple weeks ago when we had the last show, because I got this game, Champions, for the PlayStation. And the whole game is basically telling you that boxing is a mess. You got a mafia guy trying to get you on his card all the time, trying to intimidate you and get you arrested. The whole storyline is based on...
You got to throw a fight.
Yeah, you have to throw a fight. You have to fight your brother. And then you have to...
You have to pull over the referee's bought off, and every time you hit him in the body, you call a low blow.
Yeah.
But before we go off topic, the one thing I want to say about Don King is a couple years ago, his only champion at the time was Tavares Clown. And, you know, Bernard Hopkins, who Don King had for a very short period back about 12, 13 years ago. And, you know, obviously Bernard's never the easiest to put up with, especially for promoters. And he was saying, like, his goal to beat Cloud for that title was to take Don King's way of champion away at the time. And he did that. But also going back, if you wanted to talk about a funny thing about how, like, corrupt, the sport is, and I hate to say that because boxing is my sport. But they actually, Ring Magazine made light of it. And so Ring Magazine, the sport that covered boxing, the Bible of boxing, didn't make light of the sport in the latest issue that just came out. It goes, if the NFL playoffs were run like boxing sanctioning bodies, and it's like the 4-12, whatever, would be ranked and get a playoff spot. It was like whatever team would have to pay another team like step aside money so they could take their spot in the World Series, or the World Series and Super Bowl. And then instead of having one Super Bowl champion, you'd have the Super Bowl, the interim Super Bowl, the Super Super Bowl champion, the vacated Super Bowl champion, the Diamond Super Bowl champion, and it was like maybe like six total different Super Bowl champions.
Teddy Atlas will have at least one blow up in the new year. He had too many of them last year over some bad decisions on Friday Night Fights and different specials on different nights. Just the last one that they had, he saw a fight, the guy's name was Tyson Kane, winning the whole fight, and they gave it to the other guy. And the guy who won the fight and got shafted even came out and was talking to Teddy while Teddy was on air. He's trying to assure him, you know, you won that fight. And this kid is like trying to come up to Teddy going, what the hell is going on? Trying to get an explanation from him. So I just hope that Teddy takes his blood pressure medication and doesn't have a heart attack on air next year if this happens again. Decisions is a problem. Decisions are a problem, I should say, in both sports, mixed martial arts and boxing. And, you know, that's one reason why Dana White's always saying, don't leave it to the judges. Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb for anybody in the fight game these days. I think MMA is a lot less crooked than boxing in that regard, but, you know, there's still a problem with judging because in MMA it's just so many different things you can give a guy points for. In boxing, it's typically ring generalship and punches landed. That sways the judges towards a certain fighter. Knockdowns, obviously, with an extra point. Or two. For multiple. But MMA, it's just so so many different things. I mean, sometimes a takedown can win a whole round for a certain judge. I've seen it happen myself. I was at ringside as a reporter at a cage fight in Massachusetts. And I said to myself, this guy gets one more takedown, he wins his round, wins his fight. And sure enough, the judge sitting right next to me didn't have the same thought. So it happens. Whether that's fair or not, you can't really say.
One question I had, I don't understand why more retired fighters don't, apply or go through training or whatever needs to be done to become judges. Why doesn't Randy Couture sign up to be a judge? Why doesn't Mark Coleman try to be a judge? Why doesn't Pat Miletich try to be a judge? I mean, these guys know the fight game. They've been in the cage. They know, what works and what doesn't. I think John McCarthy tried his hand at judging within the last couple of years, but that's just one thing that I've always thought about. Like, why don't more fighters, retired fighters, why don't they try their hand at judging and, bring that perspective, to the judge's table, and, they could probably, dish out more adequate scoring, because obviously the judges that we have now, they don't really know. They don't understand. I mean, they go by these rules, the, quote, unified, unquote, rules of MMA, but it doesn't really seem to work. So that's just one thing that I've always wondered. Why don't more retired fighters, go through that process to become judges?
Great question. And I'll tell you, Mike Couture doesn't do it because he's got too many people he's worked with that he would be biased towards or against.
Yeah, there's a problem with bias, definitely. Randy has his buddies in the industry and all those other guys do, but, you'd hope or there'd be some kind of way to make sure that they're not showing, bias to guys that they may have trained with and just try to make sure they can be as objective as possible.
Right.
I guess maybe make that one of the requirements. There's probably no way to prove whether or not they are being objective. You just have to go by the honor system. But again, I really think that if more fighters who stop competing, go into the fight game or go into the judging game, I think that would go a long way towards improving the quality of judging.
Right. Well, we're looking forward to a big new year here. We're going to keep up with the good guests this year. That's one of the questions I forgot to put out there, too, by the way. We got a little extra time. We can go over time here, but not too much.
Well,
anyway, who was the favorite guest of you guys? I already told you mine was Bronco Billy Wright. I know Chris probably didn't listen to too many shows this year, but for the other guys, Tom and Tony, what do you think is your favorite guest?
My shot year, well, I can only... Go ahead, Tom.
I would say Sean Wheelock.
Oh, good answer.
Tony?
I was going to say, I'm going to disqualify Iceman John Kelly because we have him on about once a year and he's always a pleasure to have one. And I'm going to go with Paul the Punisher Williams.
There you go. Yeah, Paul is good. We obviously wish him a great new year, too. Hopefully he'll be walking by the end of the year if it's a really good year. But actually, on that front, I just heard Riddick Bowe, another former guest of ours, just signed on with Fight to Walk because he saw Boyd Melson out there in Vegas at the WBC convention and liked what he was doing and was fascinated at the idea that this kid was giving all his fight purses to cause, so he signed on, he's going to support it. Good stuff. And, of course, we're going to have many more guests this year, and actually, I just tried to hook up a friend of Sean O'Grady's on Facebook, and I know we kind of mentioned him in passing when we were talking about first-round knockouts with Bronco Billy, but he'd be a great guest, and I know, Tony, you're always talking about him because of Tuesday night fights.
I'd love to have Sean O'Grady on the air. He's on Facebook. I'm not a friend of his, but I see sometimes they're having people to recommend, and I haven't had a chance to friend him yet.
Yeah.
But if he's on there, I think he'd be an awesome one to have. Because, like I said, I was a big fan of Tuesday Night Fights, and Sean O'Grady with his tip of the week, and then also the knockout punch of the week. I don't know if I'd let you guys have a question.
That's what I was thinking. But anyway, we also will have Chris on again, of course. Great job tonight, Chris, and good having you
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I had a blast. And for all your listeners out there, check out my blog, MMAMaryland.blogspot.com. Hit me up on Twitter, MMAMaryland, and I let some of my friends know that I was on here tonight. So if they're listening, what's up, guys? Thanks for listening in. Let's do this again. I really appreciate it, guys.
Awesome.
All right, Chris. Look forward to it.
Yeah, you too, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, happy New Year, everybody. We're gonna
wrap it up. Happy New Year, you guys.
Let everybody know who our guest is for next week as soon as I find out.
Okay. All right, guys, let's enjoy the fight.
Yes, sir. All right, man. Take care, guys.